Every so often on Travel with Rick Steves, we like to check in with you and hear how your travels have been working out. As you know, we specialize in travel ideas for Europe, but we also like to explore other destinations, both near and far. Right now, let's hear from you. How have your travels been going on this side of the pond? Our phone number is 877-333-7425, and you can email us at radio@ricksteves.com. Justin's calling in from Jacksonville in Florida.
Hey, Rick, thanks for having me on.
Yeah.
I've been reminiscing about Canada Day, being it's summertime. My wife and I have been to Canada a number of times and have done 3 Canada Days in 3 different cities and had 3 different experiences. And so it's been pretty fun to celebrate Canada Day right around the 4th of July, because that's on July 1st.
Well, tell me more about how do the Canadians celebrate Canada Day? Is it just kind of like 4th of July, but with maple leaves and I don't know what Canadians eat, but something different?
Sure, a lot of poutine, right?
Poutine,
that's
right?
The big dish.
Yeah, but how is it? What do you do?
In Vancouver, yeah. Vancouver was very traditional, that you would expect, with the fireworks and the people on the streets. And we were there resting after the long train ride. We had taken the train from Toronto all the way across. And we were just laying around, and all of a sudden there was a huge mass of people outside. It was a giant parade went by, and we ended up going to Stanley Park. There was a huge procession, military garb, cannons being shot off, and fireworks at night, and just a really raucous party scene. And so that was a nice introduction and made us think, well, we got to get back to Canada for another Canada Day.
Canada Day tourism. Wow. So that was Vancouver. Were the other ones, places you went, different, or was it just more of the same?
No, definitely. We went to Toronto for one and went to the Blue Jays annual game, which ended up becoming an 18-inning marathon, and the manager was thrown out in the second inning of the game. And so we kind of missed the entire day's worth of festivities, but it was unique in the sense that we were there on the national day, and it was, again, another exciting crowd and a lot of fun, a lot of late-night antics, because by the time we all got out of there, it was dark, and it was sort of
18
spilled
innings.
Out of the street.
Whoa.
So that was exciting.
Yeah.
But the last one we went to was perhaps the most interesting. It was in Quebec City, where they don't really celebrate Canada Day at all. And so we didn't really think about that until we showed up. And when we got there, because I guess is it Jean the Baptiste Day is their big celebration.
Oh.
They do that a few days ahead of the event because they're sort of, annexed from
so
Canada.
They've got a little chip on their shoulder. They don't want to celebrate their 4th of July, their Canada Day, because they're the French-speaking part of Canada.
Right. And so there was no celebration, nothing on the street. Business as usual. There was a single lone vendor selling red balloons in a square and little Canadian flags, and that was it.
So
we were
no
after
Canada
experiencing
Day.
Vancouver and Toronto, we were kind of shocked and sort of laughed at ourselves when we thought about the history of what was going on. And people were looking at us like, Canada Day, get out of here with that. We don't want to talk about that.
Oh, that's so funny. Well, you got 2 out of 3.
Right, exactly. So we'll have to find another city to get to one of these days. Montreal might be the next place to check out for big cities in Canada.
Well, I hope you can go back there and have another one of those real soon.
Yeah, I can't wait. Thanks for talking to me.
Okay, take care. Happy travels. Dick's calling in from Langhorne in Pennsylvania. Hi, Dick.
Hey, Rick. How are you today?
Doing good. Do you have any thoughts about travel you'd like to share?
Well, my wife and I have spent a good part of the last 7 or 8 years traveling across the U.S. and Canada in our motorhome, and we're not full-timers, but pretty much better than half-timers, so we spent a lot of time, and we've had the opportunity to travel to 49 states. I haven't figured out how to drive to Hawaii, and we've traveled throughout Canada, but it's been a phenomenal experience, whether we're going to the iconic places like Yellowstone and Yosemite and the Painted Desert, and that list can go on, or places that nobody's ever heard of, like Wolford, North Dakota, and Tetonia, Idaho. And it's the people you meet, it's the things you do, and traveling to these places takes you through parts of the country that otherwise nobody had ever planned to drive through. And my wife and I have found that we can find beauty in almost everything we see and do throughout the country, whatever the time of year is. But you find these nuggets of history everywhere you go. We've just been fascinated by every place we've gone. In Arizona, they have one of the most incredible memorials to World War II with a large 16-inch gun from both the USS Arizona, the beginning of our entry into the war, and the Missouri, which is where the peace treaty was signed with Japan. And then you put that together with some of the places that driving around Crater Lake is got to be one of the most gorgeous experiences we've ever had, or the wildlife we've seen in on our trip to Alaska up through the Yukon. And I don't know how you can put a price on that.
Isn't that great?
It's so exciting.
I got to ask, you've spent a lot of time on the road. If you're on the road again, what road food would you be salivating about as you approach it on the highway?
It's interesting. There's a book we purchased called Road Food. What it basically says is some of the best road food in the country is old gas stations, which have been converted into restaurants. And we've experienced that, and we kind of go out of our way to find these places. I'd never had a hush puppy till we were on the road one time, and we went to this restaurant one night, and they said, would you like some hush puppies? We didn't know what they were, which may show our ignorance, but we always try to eat local food. If there's local wineries or breweries, we try and drink the craft beers and wines that are there. One quick story, we were in Tectonia, Idaho, and we ordered a pizza. Well, it took us 45 minutes. We found out why. They send somebody out who's between beers at the bar down to the local tea store at the gas station to get the pizza. They bring it up and heat it up in the microwave serve it.
Oh, that's so funny.
I mean, these are things that when you tell people, they think that really doesn't happen. But it's the beauty of our country and how diverse it is. We just get excited about it.
By the way, we've had the authors of that road food book on our show, Jane and Michael Stern, and they're just
great. Cool.
They are so enthusiastic about this quirky slice of Americana. Also, one thing I just love about is just the camaraderie on the road. I mean, it's just a wonderful community, isn't it?
It is a community of people, and you have an instant camaraderie with them because of things you're doing. And we found that the other thing I found is people around the U.S. and Canada are wonderful.
You know,
hear about unfriendliness, it's just not true.
I've been really sad about how divided our country is lately, and I'm just trying to think of positive ways, constructive ways where people can mix it up a little bit. Do you get a sense that this whole amazing RV sort of world with people driving all over the country, you park in a RV lot, there's no red state or blue state here, it's just a bunch of RVers. Does it bring people together in any way, or are there divided camps politically even in an RV park?
I think it becomes a bridge initially so that people find they've got something in common before that maybe they find out there's something that maybe would otherwise divide them. I think we have more in common with our neighbors and our friends and people around the country than we want to admit. They get hung up on the things that divide us, and they don't take advantage of finding the things they have in common, which are often a lot stronger.
And would it be fair to say that whereas certain pastimes might be predominantly people who are right-wing or left-wing, RVers are pretty much 50-50, just like our country is that way?
They're all over the lot.
They're all over the lot.
They really are.
So it's,
I mean, they are conservative, they're liberal, they're agnostic, they're religious. And I have found that this doesn't build barriers between the way maybe my wife and I feel and people we meet feel. We can have discussions, we can talk about these things and still sit down, have a glass of wine, be friends, and stay in touch with each other
years later. You're all creatures of the road together. That's great. Hey, Dick, thanks so much for sharing a good reminder about the fun we can have just exploring our own country in an RV.
I love your show. I listen to it every Sunday morning, believe it or not, at 5 a.m.
All right. Thanks a lot, and continued happy travels.
Good luck, Rick. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. We're hearing about where you've been traveling, near and far, right now on Travel with Rick Steves. You can join us in a future recording session by emailing your travel reports and observations to radio@ricksteves.com. And Tim's emailed us from Houston, and Tim writes, while walking in a narrow street in Veracruz, in Mexico, my girlfriend and I decided to walk up a set of white stone steps and then up to a pair of old carved doors. We opened them, entering a tiny atrium with a narrow, curved staircase to the side. The noise of the street ceased completely when the doors closed behind us. Emboldened by the atmosphere, we walked up the stairs that ended at a small balcony. Looking down, we found ourselves in the middle of an intimate wedding ceremony. No one seemed to realize that they had an audience. The reverberation of the vows in this small chapel made for a very surreal experience, and my partner and I just marveled at how we were able to grab that opportunity. The lesson? Anytime you find steps in an open door, consider going inside. I love it. Thank you, Tim from Houston. And Nicole's calling in from Flagstaff, Arizona. Nicole, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Rick. How are you?
I'm good. It sounds like you've had a great experience up in the Pacific Northwest.
I sure love the Pacific Northwest. So I'm originally from Germany, but now I live in Arizona. And I love being up in the Pacific Northwest near the ocean. And many years ago, I had this wonderful experience where I was at the shore and I saw a pod of orcas swimming by. And that moment, I just want to say it was life-changing. So that actually inspired me to do my next Canada trip based on those whales. I just wanted to see more of them. But instead of chasing them with a speedboat, like with a commercial outfitter, I thought, well, what if I just find a spot near the shore or out on a kayak to give myself a chance of maybe seeing them? So I thought, well, I'll ask around. And then I also hopped on Google Maps and I zoomed in to one of the areas that people kind of recommended further up Vancouver Island. And I was looking for whale shapes, humpback whales, and I found some very famed shapes that I know they weren't boats. You know, you can zoom in on Google Maps, but I saw them like in twos or threes, like one or two big ones, one small one. I thought, I think those could be whales. And based on that, I kind of designed my last Canada trip. I thought, okay, I see there's a bunch of them here in this area on Google Maps. Let's see, where's a campground close by or where can I find my Airbnb? And so I based it on that.
And that's a very good tool. I mean, a generation ago, who would have thunk, you know? And you were not disappointed.
No, I think I was really lucky, but I also did my research. Yeah.
But you know what, when you talk about not chasing them, but just observing and letting it happen, I think there's something very tranquil about that. And too many people chase animals. You know, people chase animals, but you just want to be an observer.
Exactly. I don't want to chase them. I don't want to make like a huge noise with the speedboat. I want to observe them almost as if I'm invisible. I'm just a curious visitor in their realm.
Yeah, the highlight of my cruise up in Alaska, I was up on a small ship in Alaska, and we would just hang out in the bay in our kayak. And I would hang out at the where the river hit the bay, and the bears would come down. And they'd go fishing, and they'd grab their salmon, and they would just paw it right out of the white water. And then they'd walk up to a little bluff, and they'd sit there, and they'd eat salmon fresh out of the river, just like I would have a picnic. And for me to be there, I don't think they saw me. I wasn't moving. I was just kind of there. And there was sort of a magic about that. And I feel like you had that when you were just observing the pod of orcas.
Yeah, there's a magic about that because your whole thinking shifts. Instead of a zoo experience where animals are caged, you enter their realm and you become a visitor, I guess. And there is such beauty and magic in that, for sure.
I think part of that is the fact that that's going to happen there with or without you. And you are just there, and you're just part of that natural wonder. Hey, you're from Germany, and I know that Germans love their nature, and they love to go to the Black Forest and regenerate and walk.
Yes.
And they love to go to the foothills of the Alps and so on. Where in Germany could you have that beautiful nature experience? I don't think you're going to see a pod of orcas, but where would you see something that is just as majestic?
Right. It depends on what you're looking for, but I think the German soul, if you go back like in art history, the romantic area, and in German literature and poetry, you find that. And Germans, they love going into the forest, even on little forest trails. But say, for example, you're heading into southern Germany near the Alps. Maybe instead of just Munich and just the castle, maybe you can build in a day where you seek out a mountain trail that's not like too popular and just immerse yourself in nature. Do the forest bathing.
Yeah. Forest bathing. I love that. That's it's fun. I always think of that as a Japanese concept, but you can do it
wherever you
travel.
I agree. Wherever you go, you can seek out those experiences and be refreshed.
Thank you so much, Nicole, for your insight and inspiring us to be quiet and don't chase the animals, but let it happen.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, happy travels.
Happy travels. Bye.
And Bonnie in Philadelphia emailed us. She wrote about her response to our talk with Christopher P. Baker about visiting Cuba. Bonnie writes, "My husband, son, and I went to Cuba a few months ago and were touched by the warmth of the Cuban people and the beauty of their island. We were surprised that they liked us and were so friendly and didn't resent Americans. The Cubans that we met seemed to be able to separate us from our government. It was so sad to see the long lines of people waiting for groceries at stores with empty shelves, the long lines at bus stops for buses that never seemed to come, and the general hardship under which they were living. In order to get a visa, we had to give ourselves a classification, and our classification was in support of the Cuban people. We stayed at a locally owned B&B and ate all our meals at privately owned restaurants, attended local music performances, and enjoyed the arts and culture. We hired the local tour guides and drivers and have become friends with several of them. Cuba sure surprised us in so many ways. We now encourage our friends to make a visit, and we plan to return." Wow, Bonnie, that is like an email I could have sent in after going there with my family also. I've never met anybody who went to Cuba on their own that wasn't similarly impressed by the people of that complicated island with such a rich history and a fraught relationship with our country. The very best thing I did is exactly what you did. I hired a local guide who was also a driver. And that way we had our translator, we had our local comedian, we had our negotiator, we had somebody who could pick us up at our B&B and drop us at our B&B at the end of the day. We made more friends, and we certainly learned more about what we were looking at. I guess I just would say, if you had an opportunity to go to Cuba, I imagine you're thankful you did. And if you're dreaming to go to Cuba, judging by the feedback we get from our travelers, it's a lot of fun. Yvonne in Houston writes to us about an adventure she had visiting a mountain city in Oaxaca City in Mexico. "We boarded a van in Pochulca, Mexico, and wound our way up the Sierra Madre del Sur, going north from the Pacific coast. We were bound for Oaxaca City. The van driver made a hairpin turn every 30 seconds for almost 5 hours. I loved the views, gorgeous, sweeping vistas of the mountainous jungles below and plunging drop-offs that added to the already agitated state of my stomach. We stopped behind a rickety old local bus that had broken down. Guess what? We jammed all the passengers from that bus into our van and stopped at villages all along the way, dropping them off at their destinations. Finally, we arrived at Oaxaca City, a 16th century Spanish colonial town famous for its chocolate, its Zapotec weavings, and its famous archaeological site of Monte Alban. I walked into a church that surely must have been shipped from Italy with its lavish gold-covered Baroque altar and ceiling. Ah, to enjoy Oaxaca City in the charming Las Mariposas, an inn once the home of a Spanish family with its multiple patios and delicious breakfast served with homemade breads and sweets and café de olla, that's coffee from a jar. All this certainly helped me endure winding back down those same hairpin turns through the Sierras. Afterward, my brain recouped while staring out at the turquoise waters, reclined on the beach on Oaxaca's southern Pacific coast, my mind drifting out to sea." Wow, Yvonne in Houston, Texas. Great report from Oaxaca, down in Mexico.
Travel with Rick Steves is produced by Tim Tatton, Kaz Mora-Hall, and Donna Bardsley at Rick Steves Europe in Edmonds, Washington. Affiliate relations are by Sheila Gerzoff. Website uploads are by Andrew Wakeling and Sherry Quirt. Our theme music is by Jerry Frank. You can find links to our guests and search the show archives at ricksteves.com/radio. We'll look for you again next week with more Travel with Rick Steves.